B2. Number 19A.
Whereas when we now come to Christian Science, to the lowest level, Mrs. Eddy explains it like this. She says, the term Christian Science relates especially to science, applied to humanity. Can you see? Now it comes to humanity. No, humanity has nothing to do with the human, with the mortal, and all the experiments of the mortal. It's not applied to ideas, as in absolute Christian Science. It's applied to humanity, to solving, therefore. And she says, her highest creed has been divine science, which reduced to human apprehension, not to divine apprehension, to human apprehension, she called Christian Science. Can you see what she said? I reduce divine science to Christian Science, which means to human understanding, to human apprehension. That's what we had here. The human apprehension is how to get rid of mortal mind, how to get rid of the material concept, how to get rid of believing in the testimony of the senses. That's the human concept. Or she says, the term Christian Science was introduced by the author to designate the scientific system of divine healing. Can you see physical healing we had here? Dorley said, and Christian Science is a scientific and metaphysical application of the Christ Science, which is absolute, of the Christ Science in human experience. So always a great reduction, you see. Science itself is reduced to divine science. Divine science is reduced to Christian, to absolute Christian Science or Christ Science. This is reduced to Christian Science. Or he says, I think this is a good one, Christian Science is application of scientific methods to human problems in order to heal sin, sickness and death, and so on. Okay, you just can now hear the tone. Well, you have to. I don't leave you any other chance. Now, if we have here those four levels, how could we perhaps best epitomize in the smallest common denominator what they mean? For myself, I just would say, see, that science is really principle, shows being as principle per se. Principle being principle, as science. In divine science, we begin to consider principle and idea as one. See, we have a greater splitting up, so to say, principle and idea as one. The moment we come to absolute Christian Science, you are in absolute Christian Science, you are always interested in a specific idea of the universe, of being, a specific idea. Therefore, here we have the relationship from principle to idea, with the accent of on idea. So, not very nicely written. See, to idea. Or it is principle to idea, yes. The moment we have seen, we touch idea, the idea resolves its opposite. Therefore, in Christian Science, really, we have the relationship of, say, truth to error, or idea to illusion, I think this is, perhaps at the moment, as I can pinpoint it, the most simple presentation of these four levels. See, you, from the top you begin to see that it is a constant splitting up and splitting up of the one principle until it finally reaches its very opposite, error or illusion. So if we keep in mind Whenever we think in these categories, especially next week where we talk for 4 or 5 days about these categories, you see, but we always will find the right answer, the right attitude, the moment we keep this keynote in our consciousness. In science, it is just principle per se. Principle which is its own mind, principle which is its own spirit, principle which is its own soul, principle which is its own life, its own truth, its own soul, a law which does not ask anything about ideas. But the moment thought says, well, I would like to see the whole universe of ideas. I would like not just to see the center of something as one principle, but see that this principle has a whole universe of ideas. Then I come to divine science and see that this principle has infinite ideas, but that these ideas never leave principle. That's the main point. That these ideas never leave principle, and that therefore they always are one, and so constitute, say, oneness. Oh. I could have put here one, and here oneness. So whenever I'm concerned with the universe and want to see the universe right, I begin to take in the divine science standpoint and see that it is a universe of ideas which have never left its origin. The moment I am interested in a specific idea of that universe, not in the whole universe, but in a specific idea of the universe, whatever that specific idea is, a specific experience, a specific healing, a specific condition, and so on, my interest is shifted towards idea. Towards idea. And so I ask, how do I get to the right idea? And so I see they are always an expression of its principle. And so I begin to know something about the idea. Ideas of principle. So, from the infinite one, you come to oneness and then to the specific ideas. Not idea, but the ideas. See, the ideas. Specific truths. You demonstrate specific qualities, specific spiritual values. Because we don't always have to demonstrate the whole world. Can you see? We live in the whole world. Therefore we must have in divine science a right concept of the whole world because we live in it. But also we must have a right sense about specific ideas which just come into our experience. And so we jolly well have to have on those specific circumstances the right ideas. And the moment I come to right ideas, naturally, then this acts as dissolving illusion. Like this. Huh? So, either we keep this in mind or this in mind, they mean more or less the same, you see, but you feel that it is something very natural. Well, it's natural to me. I hope it's natural to you. See? Because these are the great questions which always are put. Either somebody comes along and says, well, what is Christian Science says? Well, it's healing sickness. No, it's only one aspect. The purpose of Christian Science, the other one says, is to live a right life, to have a way of life, and therefore to demonstrate in every detail the divine principle. He's in absolute Christian Science. The other one comes and says the purpose of Christian Science is really divine science, namely to see that in the whole universe nothing happens which does not somehow, which is somehow always included in the oneness of being. Nothing is excluded. No situation is excluded from anywhere. And so finally you come to the last point where I say, actually, I think the highest purpose of Christian Science is just to see the I Am, the one principle, every operation. and you come to the one principle always in infinite operation. In regard, there's only a few minutes left there, in regard to evil, you see, to the opposite, we come, say, can look at it from the point of view, how should we look at evil? Very interesting point. We have yesterday seen how Mrs. Eddy handles evil through the 16 chapters. Here we can see what is the different attitude towards the question of evil if you look at it from the levels. If you look at it from the top level of science itself, the question of evil does not enter. That's one answer. See, the highest answer is the question of evil is not put. The question, what is evil, is answered in science, I don't hear what you say. Or the answer here in science, when somebody says, what is evil, is, this is a wrong question. I'm not going to answer a wrong question because a wrong question cannot be answered. Can you see that? The question, what is evil, is a question that is put over and over and over and over by anybody. And everybody tries to find a pet answer. There is no pet answer. There is only seeing the question in its structure. Here in divine, in science itself, Mrs. Eddy says, that's not the question. What is evil? If evil does not exist and is not something, how can you answer a question, what is evil? You can only answer a right question. A wrong question can never be answered. We started this morning and said, how could we see the question of evil when entries from the four levels are these? Is this question dealt in the same way or not? Now we see, the moment we start with science itself, then the question of evil is a wrong question, which we shouldn't ask, really. In the, as she said, he says, what that's like, this morning I want to point out, she says, in the order of science, in the order of science, see, science, in which the principle is above what it reflects, all is one grand concord. See, at that point, the question of evil is not asked. Just not asked. It's a wrong question. And so, here in science, we can see that evil is unknown, you see. Just unknown, or not asked. Unknown. So, if we think from science, we would never dream of asking what is evil. Because thinking from the throne of grace, well, we just look out into the universe and all what we know is what comes from the throne of grace. And there is no reason for asking what is evil, or where does evil come from, or anything like that. The trouble is always, you see, with us, that we always go out from the wrong point, namely from the problem, from evil, from a situation, and want to solve that. Instead of going out from the infinite one and see there, we just have one harmony, one grand conqueror. So if we don't let the human mind ask anything, doesn't give to the human mind a chance. Oh, now I get into American slang, huh? Not a chance. Aha, you're happy now. We don't give the human mind a chance, then, naturally, we are not troubled by that question. And that really would be a right attitude. But if something in us wants to get troubled, well, we have to reduce it to divine science, and there, in divine science, we have seen, the divine science gives a sense of oneness, the oneness of all in all, the oneness of good, and therefore here the question of evil is dealt with in a different way. It says, evil is excluded. So you can say, it is excluded. You see, you already take in a little bit the question of evil by saying, where is it? And you say, it is explicit. It says, in divine signs, rising, how does she say that? In divine signs, rising above physical theories, excludes matter, excludes evil. That's the tone of divine science, of oneness, where we say if there is just oneness, then within that oneness there is no possibility for evil, so it is excluded. And so we just put evil out of the harmony of being. But usually the human mind is still not satisfied with that and asks another question. Can you see that these levels are really here to quiet human mind, to quiet the unbelieving Thomas within us, to quiet the human mind and human mind's argument? So when it says, well, it's excluded, then perhaps the thought comes further and says, but why do I still experience it? And so Christian Science comes and answers this question in a different way and says, yes, you know, good and evil are but different stages of the one thing, namely of good. If you understand good, it is good. If you don't understand good, it's evil. Just as Mrs. Ellis said, that spirit and matter are states and stages of consciousness. They are not two things. Or as we have seen now today, all the various philosophers and so on say that spirit and matter are not two substances, but are just two different aspects of the same cosmic stuff. So here we begin to answer the question, what is evil, by saying it is good misunderstood. That's all there is. From the absolute standpoint, we just say, yes, we may think about it, but all that's in about it, it is that good is misunderstood. So finally, thought comes further down to, what do you say, rock bottom? Not bottom rock, huh? Rock bottom question, and said, well, how do I therefore deal with it, and what is true about evil? And so we see that good is really superior to evil, or that good overcomes evil, or anything like that, you see. Now, here we have four different answers to the same question. And you can see that according to the level where somebody is who comes along to you, you will give him a different answer. If he's a very neophyte or so, you say, well, you know, good is bigger than evil. And just have for every evil something good. Replace evil with good. Let the good in you the supremacy over evil, the ascendancy over evil, or anything like that. As if both were real. And say, the one is bigger than the other. But when you come to absolute Christian Science, to absolute, where we have already to give an absolute answer, we can say, you know, evil is really nothing by itself. It is good which is misunderstood. Then, if it is misunderstood, you can go further and higher and say, therefore, because evil is just a misunderstanding of the good, therefore, if good is all, really evil doesn't enter into a thing. It is excluded. It doesn't really exist. And so you come to the highest point and say, therefore you have the perfect right just to have no knowledge of evil. You just go out from the good or from the infinite and don't bother about that question of evil when you have risen through that thing. So you can have it in the ascending way, you can have it in the descending way. Every time it's a different answer, and yet it is the same question. And so naturally you can take many other questions like healing or matter or so, when one goes through the textbook and sees how she deals with these questions, you always see that on the four levels she deals with it differently, but everything is right. Because you must always keep in mind that none of these levels can exist separately. The moment we touch one, we must take into consideration that they are within the structure of all four. And we have seen that if we touch Christian Science with some idea that this has within in itself already the power to lead thought further and further and push further and push further until it accepts absolute Christian Science, and then pushes further and further to divine science, pushes further to science, we can't help it. And so they are always one, you see. That's the sense of structural thinking. That in structural or in structural and in dimensional thinking, we have never one particle alone, isolated. Yes. Now, could you stop for a moment? Now, let's consider these four levels from the point of view of the synonymous terms. See, we have seen that the synonymous term, or so to say, the meat of the whole thing, the flesh of the whole thing, the structure is important to hold everything together. So, within that structure of the four levels, I want to point this out like this. The moment. So, within the structure of the four levels, where we have here science, we can ask ourselves, what is that synonymous term which characterizes or pinpoints this level of science itself? Well, the synonymous term which characterizes it is infinite principle. Just principle. The highest synonymous term, so to say, for God, insofar as we have seen that principle includes all the other synonymous terms. In science, we just have that sense, all that there is going on is principle expressing itself as infinite principle. The infinite operation of principle as what it is. In a way, naturally, we always can elaborate that. We always can see, well, if as principle does reflect all the other synonymous terms, naturally, it expresses itself through the other synonymous terms. But in which way? See, and I think here we have the most powerful, most operative and dynamic sense of principle. Namely that which Mrs. Eddy says, see, that God is his own infinite mind. Now, if we put in place of God, which is the mythological term for being, principle, then we begin to realize here that what science as such really teaches us is that nothing is going on but the divine principle as infinite mind. That principle is his own infinite mind. That principle is his own infinite spirit. That principle is its own infinite soul. That principle is its own infinite principle. Its own infinite life. That principle is its own infinite truth. Its own infinite love. Can you hear? I am using usually all these laws and terms like the priestly document in the Bible writes. Namely, the priestly document in the Bible is always that part in the Bible where they are very systematic, where they just take a statement and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. Just like in the days of creation, every day of creation starts with God said, and second, and God said, because that's the the scriptural sense which the priestly document had. You know, the priestly document is that document which has given those parts of the Old Bible which had been written during the Babylonic captivity. They were the, so to say, the systematizer of the Old Testament. They systematized the Jehovistic document, they systematized the Elohistic document and the Deuteronomic document into, together with the priestly document, in that what we have today as the Old Testament. So, can you see what consciousness means at that level? At that level, consciousness takes in only the synonymous terms and in its own aspect. See, principle is its own infinite mind. See, there is no idea mentioned here. I don't say anything about principle interpreting itself through the systems of ideas, so that's no more science. Science as such, when a synonymous term expresses itself as a synonymous term. What should that mean, what Mrs. Eddy said, that God is his own infinite mind? See, a very different statement than to say God is mind, or God is infinite mind. That wouldn't be science as such. It would be just a statement. But to say that God is his own infinite mind is saying something quite tremendous. First of all, the moment she says a statement with one synonym like this, we have the right to elaborate it through all the synonyms, because all the synonyms relate to God. And so can first of all expand that statement through all the seven. And then actually you have to sit back and be quiet within yourself, be still, and ask yourself, what on earth does it mean that principle is its own infinite mind? You know, that is its own infinite spirit, is its own infinite soul. Can you hear that it gives us a complete infinite sense of our being? When she says that principle is its own infinite mind, it means really, negatively expressed, that principle doesn't know any other mind. Because we have seen on that level of science, evil is unknown. Remember, on the level of science itself, evil is unknown. So principle, being its own infinite mind, states that principle only knows itself as mind. Mind itself. If we would believe that and stick to that, we wouldn't ask all those thousands and thousands and thousands of questions, have all those thousands and thousands of fears in our daily life, where we say, but do I have the right thought? Are there enough other minds around me which influence me? But he is not thinking right. He has not the right thoughts. His mentality is not nice. His mentality influences me. You know, my thoughts are not good. And so, can you see, we would exclude all those questions. Thousands and thousands of them. They're all questions we would exclude, which have anything to do with mentality, with thinking, with mortal mind, with human mind, with erroneous mind, with irritated mind, everything about mind, small m, about thought and mentality and influence. We would exclude all those. We wouldn't have the faintest concept that some other mentality could harm us, or some other mentality can hinder the progress of our work, or anything like that. Because if the divine principle is his own infinite mind, that means that there is no other mind, because it's infinite mind. And then we will just rejoice in that very fact, you see,
that principle is the mind, and its mind, and its things for its mind, therefore the only mind. I wouldn't care tuppence about anything else. Not two hoots about anything else, but mentality. But you know how people are afraid of thinking. Do I think right? Do you think I have the right thought? Is it right when I think so and so? They are afraid of the thoughts of other people. They are afraid of mentalities of other people, the mentality of the surroundings, and so on, because they believe in another mind. They believe that there is a mind which is out, which is next, and exists next to the mind which is principle. But if you would just go through that, you know, a principle is its own infinite mind, you would just feel so at rest and so rooted in the consciousness that mind which principle has is the infinite mind. Next to the infinite there is nothing, or it wouldn't be infinite. Infinite means that there is no infinite minus one, but there is all in all,